This week's mailbag comes to us from Amy via Facebook. Many miracles. Week 3 of the kids program, and my 9-year-old did a great job on her room 3 weeks in a row. And her room has stayed clean during the week because she knows she has to clean it every week. It took our 6-year-old 2 weeks the first time because she had so much stuff. This week, the 9-year-old did such a good job on hers and quickly that I asked her to help her sister with hers. They are working together, finding many lost things and having fun. And I am working on my Sunday basket that I do on Saturday while they clean their rooms. Thank you, Lisa Woodruff. Do you have an organized 365 success story? We would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at lisa@organized365.com and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organized 365.
Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Last week on the podcast, I answered your questions and I talked about how do you fit behavior change and getting organized into a schedule that literally has no time? Like, how do you fit it in? And we unpacked that last week. This week, I have a lot of questions that have been submitted about how do you get organized with ADHD? And to be honest, it's overwhelming. Like, your situation is overwhelming. The questions are overwhelming. You'll hear over and over again the same exact themes repeated by different people who either have ADHD, the majority have ADHD, or are organizing children who have ADHD. And ADHD is a genetic condition, so often many people in the family or all the people in the family have ADHD. So I want to tell you a totally different story before I get started. I do not have ADHD and my executive functions function pretty well and I've learned all about them. No one has perfect executive functioning. No one has imperfect executive functioning. It's all a continuum. So as I give these answers for ADHD, I want to talk about an area in my life that I'm pathetic at it. So let's start there. I've mentioned before about exercise, about getting healthy, about physical fitness. I'm terrible. Luckily, I have amazing genetics and the women in my family, all the way back on my mother's side, just don't exercise. Like they just don't do it. And we have really good genes and they live a long time. However, I know that that's not necessarily a good thing. Like I should be more physically fit. Let's put this in perspective. On a day that I work from home, record podcasts, work on my computer, I walk about 2,000 steps. 2,000, that's not even a mile, people. 2,000 steps. Like the last time I hit 10,000 steps was a long time ago. I got an Apple Watch to track my steps because I thought the phone wasn't keeping track of them. Do you know how much an Apple Watch cost? Yeah, a ridiculous expense to prove that I was walking maybe 300 more steps than I realized I was. If I hit over 5,000 steps, I'm doing amazing. And lately I've been getting myself to 7,500 to 8,000 and I am like throwing a party. Many people walk 10,000 steps every single day, day in, day out. It's not even an issue. For me, let me just tell you how far we went with this. Here are the things that I've tried in the last 6 months. I decided I was going to wake up early and I was going to run 5,000 steps so that I could get 10,000 steps a day. So, you know I don't have running clothes. I had tennis shoes and whatever, gardening clothes, and I put them on and I went out and I ran at 6:30 in the morning thinking this is great, no one will be up. Yeah, right. School had just started, so I literally ran, and wait till you hear about the running. It wasn't really running. Ran by kids who were waiting at the bus stop. And basically, the whole entire neighborhood was up at 6:30. I could not believe it. So I cannot run a mile. If I'm not walking 2,000 steps a day, I clearly cannot run a mile. So here's what I decided. lately, I have asthma, and lately my capacity for breathing has increased. I just know it has. And I'm like, I bet I could be a runner. So funny. So I would run two houses, walk two houses, run two houses, walk two houses, the whole way. I did this a total of 3 times. My neighbor's husband saw me. She comes over, she says, "Hey, do you run?" I was like, "No." She's like, "Are you sure? Because my husband thought, yes, I was running. I'm not running. I don't run." Okay, so it didn't work for so many reasons. One, there were too many people out there. I was embarrassed. It took too long. It was sweaty. I just didn't like it. So now I have bought this mini trampoline from my office, and I was so excited about it. It took me a week to put it together. I put it together. I used it once. It sat here now for a week and a half, and I haven't used it yet. But the goal is that every hour I will get up and I will jump on the trampoline for 3 minutes. And then by the end of the day, I'll have more steps and I'll have more physical wellness. Now, that's where I am physically fit-wise. You should know that. What I am attracted to on Instagram and literally quasi-obsessed about right now are people who are running 100-mile races, climbing mountains, doing all of these endurance feats. And I watch it. I'm riveted. I go and I check out how much it would be to sign up. I look at my calendar to see if it would fit. People, I do not walk 10,000 steps in a day. I cannot run a mile down the street. And yet I am checking out how I would sign up for a 100-mile race. Not normal behavior. However, when I get into answering these ADHD questions, I want to tell you this. If I wanted to, I could run a 100-mile race. I could climb a mountain. I could do any of those endurance things that I see other people doing. If I want to, with plenty of preparation, years and years and years from now. Tomorrow, I could walk a 5K. I know I could walk a 5K. I don't even think I'd be sore the next day. I would have no problem walking a 5K. If I wanted to run a 5K, I would probably have to put training in for about a year before I could truly run start to finish a 5K of running pretty much 3 to 5 times a week. Feel free to email me if you think I could do it faster, but I'm just here to tell you I couldn't. And I tell you all this because we all have strengths and weaknesses. Physical activity is probably one of my biggest weaknesses. I always like to say that I exercise my brain and my mouth, and I have like Olympic style brain and mouth. People always laugh, but it's true. Like, we can't exercise all of our muscles. We can't eat all the same way. Like, we can't all be debt-free and all perfectly organized. There is no perfect person. And so while I don't struggle with organization, it's why I'm helping you, teaching you, leading you, guiding you. I totally struggle with exercise, nutrition, somewhat debt repayment, all of those things. I am not a perfect person. So now I'm going to get into these questions that you're asking me about how to get organized when ADHD is a challenge, when your executive function is a challenge for you. And I basically am going to give you organizational advice that you would give to me if I was going to run a 5K a year from now. You would say, "Lisa, maybe you should buy some running shorts instead of running in jean shorts. Maybe you should buy tennis shoes that are more than $30 if you're going to be running. You need to set up a schedule and you need to go 3 to 5 times a week. Even if you walk, you need to at least walk a 5K 3 times a week so that at least your body's getting used to walking. Then I want you to run, you know, the first, whatever. I want you to run for 5 minutes and then walk for 5 minutes and then run for 4 and then walk for 4, whatever." You would give me a prescriptive and I would do it. And over time, a year from now, I know I could run a 5K. I cannot run a 5K tomorrow. So I have to take the steps. So I am going to way break it down in this podcast, down to the Lisa is going to have to learn how to walk a 5K so she can run a 5K a year from now. So the steps I'm going to give you are simple, but they're not easy. And it is consistency. I was talking to a friend the other day who also has a business, and she said, "I've done all of these things, but you know what? I've never been consistent. And my word for next year is consistency." And I said, "I'll tell you what, consistency beats everything. Everything. It beats talent. It beats money. It beats intensity. It beats everything. If you are consistent at something over a long period of time, you just succeed. It's just like finally it's like, well, give it to her because she just is not going away. You know, so consistency. Simple things done consistently over time will change so much in your house. The other thing that I'm going to counsel in almost everything is if it normally would take however long to get something done, I want you to give yourself 4 to 5 times as long to do it. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it is so true. There is a reason why if you have ADHD, they give you extra time on tests in school. It's because you need extra time. You need extra time to organize your thoughts, to process, to recall information. You need extra time. So if the 100-day program, which I've already told you most people don't get through 100 days, and I tell you it takes 3 times going through it, you should anticipate it's going to take 6 to 12 times for you to go through it, which is, yeah, a lot more years. But don't worry about it because you are building your organizational muscles. You're building things brick by brick. It's just going to take a little bit longer to build your tower. But it doesn't matter, right? If at the end it takes you 4 years to get organized instead of 1 year to get organized, but you get organized, that is worth it than saying, well, if I can't do it in a year, I'm just not going to do it and I'm going to live a disorganized life. For me, if I were to get with my other girlfriends, they probably all could run a 5K way faster than I could. They might be able to do it in, you know, a month, 2 months, 3 months. It's going to take me 5 years. Does that mean that I should never learn to do it? No, it just means it's going to take me longer. Okay? All right. Before I start, there are 4 over-the-counter supplements and things that I have done with my kids that have helped them with their ADHD. I'm going to give those to you again because I get questions a lot about them. One is a supplement called Alpha Brain. It is from the company Onnit, O-N-N-I-T. I'm going to create a link at organize365.com/onnit, O-N-N-I-T. And when you type that in, it will redirect you directly to this Alpha Brain supplement. Take a look at it. See if it's something that might work for you or your family members. It works great for Joey. It doesn't work for Abby. That's the other thing. Like, supplements are going to work for some and not for others. So check it out. Joey also says it works right away. Like, it works within a couple of days. It's not a supplement that needs to build up in your bloodstream. So that helped him a lot. Another thing we did with Joey when he was younger that he really said worked very well were B12 shots. And I got those from a dentist, actually. A dentist had these B12 shots. And that's just the vitamin B12, but we gave it to him in his hiney. And that seemed to help him a lot as well. Next is Epsom salts. I talk about Epsom salts every day. Like, it's, I use Epsom salts more than I drink water. I love Epsom salts. My kids love Epsom salts. Basically, it's what grandma used if you didn't feel good or you sprained your leg. It's a combination of magnesium and salt. And so sulfur. Sulfur detoxifies your body through your skin. Your skin is your largest organ. So if you do an Epsom salt bath, or you could even do a foot soak as well, and you put your feet or your body into that bath, it's going to detoxify your body from the day. And what I notice is I have less migraines and less shoulder tension when I do the baths. My kids have less anxiety and they sleep better. So it detoxifies your body, and then it replaces or infuses your body with magnesium. And magnesium is very calming. Most of us are magnesium deficient. Calms your muscles, calms your body. Sleep really well when you have Epsom salts. I love them. I buy them in bulk. I now buy the ones that have like the menthol smell to them, but any Epsom salts really work well. And then the last one is, if you have children who have ADHD and they are not on stimulant medication for whatever reason, doesn't matter what reason they are or they're not on it, try some coffee. I know with Joey, we tried coffee and that did help him in the morning. Also, melatonin helps as well to go to sleep. People who typically have ADHD have a poor melatonin cycle. And so their body does not produce as much melatonin as people who don't have ADHD. And so they have a harder time falling asleep and they also have a harder time waking up. So we do use melatonin for everyone in our family. And then also in the morning, I would let the kids have coffee And now Joey usually has like an energy drink. I don't suggest those. They are not really healthy, and he's trying to find a healthier alternative. And so we are working towards coffee. Abby is trying coffee as well. There are some higher quality coffees you can get. And when Joey was little, we would give him like the instant chocolate coffee. All these things help, because what's happening in ADHD, from my understanding as a layperson, is basically what a stimulant medication does, or coffee or anything like that, is it just gets everything firing in the front of your brain more. It makes you more aware, and it'll just help you with some of your ADHD executive functioning. All of the things that I'm suggesting are all over the counter. You will notice within a day or two if that helps you or not. If it does, use it. If it doesn't, don't. Obviously, talk to your doctor about it. Well, that's quite an introduction before I even answered any questions, isn't it? All right, these are not in order. I'm just going to go in the order they're submitted and give you some thoughts about how you can get organized when these are your questions. The first question is, how do you get a routine going when you can't stay consistent? My teen is killing me. So here's the thing. In this question, I think that there are two consistencies needed. So how do you get a routine going when you can't stay consistent? And then they mention the teenage child. So is it you that can't stay consistent, or the teen that can't stay consistent? And in this case, I think it is both. I would go back to the last podcast, which is how do you fit in behavioral change? I talked a lot about scheduling. I talked about morning, afternoon, and evening routines. I think that number one, for a routine, that's such a loaded word. Like, a routine, does that just mean getting up at a certain time, getting out the door and going to bed at a certain time? Does that mean like when homework is done, when things are packed in the car, when practice is, how often we do our chores? Like, you can make a routine that is as simple as I want you up and in the car at 7 and I want lights out by 10 o'clock at night. Or as complicated as I have these 42 things that we're going to do throughout the day and I want you to check them off as we go along. What we tend to do, or at least what I tend to do, when we get overwhelmed and when we try to fix something, is we try to fix it from the way it is today to the perfect image of how it would be in our mind if we could design it without humans involved. And what I would love for you to do in all of these questions and in all of your frustrations at home right now is to look at how it is today and ask yourself, what's one thing that could do better? If we just focused on this one thing, how would it make it better? So if you're having trouble with getting a routine going and you cannot stay consistent, what is one thing? What is the most important part of the routine that if this happens, everything else would be easier or not necessary? That's the question that comes out of the One Thing book by Gary Keller. What is the one thing that we could add to the routine that if they did this one thing, either everything else on the list will become easier or won't even be necessary? Maybe it's that we need to leave 15 minutes earlier in the morning. So I need you in the car at 6:45 instead of 7, and then the rest of the day you can do on your own. Or maybe for you, you know that they need to go to bed earlier or you need to go to bed earlier and you're like, 10 o'clock, lights out, no more phone. Even if I lay there awake staring at the ceiling in the dark room until midnight, at least I'm processing my own thoughts and I'm not using any outside stimulation until my body gets used to that new bedtime. Or the one that I think is the easiest to make a difference in and will make the biggest impact overall is your afternoon routine. In the morning, some people are morning people, some people are late night people. My kids are late night people. I'm a morning person, so when I'm ready to go with my checklist, they don't want to hear about it. When they're ready to go with their checklist, I don't want to hear about it. But usually, after school and after work, that before dinner time, we all have somewhat of energy, right? You have somewhat of energy. That afternoon time, creating a schedule there where you connect with your child and go through what urgently needs to get done before the end of the day, or just even being made aware that they're not emptying the dishwasher again, will be helpful. Start with one thing in that afternoon check-in, and you might call it a check-in. Have any papers for me from school? You know, what do we need to get checked off on the list tonight together? Do you have everything else on your own? Okay, good, you're off. And start adding more things in there. Could you set the table for me? Could you clean out the backpack? Could you go upstairs and grab this? I need it for a meeting tomorrow, or something like that. Like, You get 20 minutes every day. It's at the same time. You meet whatever you can pack into that 20 minutes, and then you're both off doing your own thing. So work on your routine one piece at a time, morning, afternoon, or evening. I think that afternoon is the easiest. The next question. How can I not get so overwhelmed doing so that I do nothing? How do I not get so overwhelmed that I end up doing nothing? I have so been there. You don't have to be ADHD to just be overwhelmed about the amount of stuff. Number one, when you get overwhelmed, go ahead and sit down, grab a legal pad, grab a stack of index cards, whatever, and write down every single thing that is in your mind and is bothering you and needs to get done. Just write it all down on paper. Sometimes this takes me like 30 to 40 minutes and I just keep writing more and more and more and more. Write it all down. Now I want you to keep that in the Sunday basket. Like, don't get rid of it. Now it is out of your brain, it's on the paper. And the first time you do this, you're gonna be overwhelmed, you're gonna wanna check stuff off. Don't worry about it, just write it all down. And then every day after that, when you start to get overwhelmed, you can either go check and make sure it's already on the list or start another brain dump list and just get used to, instead of holding all these ideas in your head and trying to puzzle them in there, putting them on paper so that they're abstract from you. They are now ideas that you had and now they're on a piece of paper. Whether you get them done or not, in both situations, we're not getting them done. But what we're doing is we're separating this ridiculous amount of ideas, to-dos from your head to a piece of paper. And we're putting it in the Sunday basket. And I just want you to get in the habit of saying to your brain, yep, it's written down. Yep, it's written down. And get your brain to stop talking back to you about being overwhelmed. Then step two, and that first step is going to take like a month. Step two, if you go back to that to-do list, you're going to be overwhelmed seeing that entire to-do list again, right? So go ahead in your overwhelmed state, go through that entire to-do list, and I want you to take a highlighter and just highlight like the top three things that really have to get done. And then the next day, come back to that list and only look at those highlighted three, pick one and start working on it. And as you get overwhelmed, write down all those ideas, put them in the Sunday basket, go back to that one. Next question is, how do I stay focused and not rabbit trail so much? And the one after that is, how do I stay focused until the task is completed and not task switching? I'm reading these, even though they're exactly the same, because I want you to realize that if you're thinking the same thing, people are literally submitting the same exact question over and over and over again because we are so overwhelmed. So what I'm going to say is, I want you to pick one task until it is done. One task until it is done. And now I'm going to skip over to this other question. Let me mark these off so I know where I am and answer this one. This question says, your focus podcast, which was a couple podcast episodes back, was stress. How do you do it when you can't pick one to focus on? Because my answer to these two questions is pick one task and then focus on it. Here's the thing. If I want to climb a mountain and I want to run a 100-mile race and I want to do whatever, like, you can't do all of them. You have to pick one. I know you're like, yeah, but I have to do laundry and dishes and driving the kids and whatever. I can't pick one. Okay. When was the last time you were able to wash dishes, fold laundry, and drive at the same time? You can't. You cannot do it. You physically can't. I mean, you can task stack, like you can listen to a podcast while you fold laundry. I agree with that. Like, I'm not saying there's no such thing as multitasking whatsoever, but you literally cannot do dishes and fold the laundry and drive your kids somewhere at the same time. So why are you putting this pressure on you that you have to? You can only do one thing at a time. And if you go a couple of episodes back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if you're in level 1 and 2, then you don't have time for organizing because you literally are not getting the dishes and the laundry and the whatever done. And that's when you then need to go back and figure out, like, okay, how can I get any free time to do the organizing? You have to take care of your physical basic needs first. And I think that's where some of the tension comes in, that there is physically no time to do it. There's no time to do it. If that is the case, recognize it, acknowledge it. Let someone else know and then say, can you look at my schedule and figure out how I could do this? Or Again, take a Saturday morning, a Friday night, a Sunday afternoon, some little pocket of time, even if you can just get 1 hour a week where you say, this is my one organizing hour and I will live in the survival of the Maslow's level one and level two, but 1 hour a week, I'm gonna go up to that third ring and I'm gonna enjoy it. And then I'm gonna go back down into level one and two until I am living in levels three and four. And slowly move yourself forward. Just because you have so much to do and you want to do so much does not mean that you could do more than one task at a time or you can focus on more than one project at a time. Next question, how do you overcome out of sight is out of mind? I don't think you do. And even though I don't struggle with ADHD, I do struggle with out of sight is out of mind. Like, if it is not in front of me, I don't know it exists. That's why I created the Sunday basket and all these workboxes, because files don't work. If I put any of my stuff into files, I will never do that. But because I have these open boxes in front of me with colorful slash pockets that are all labeled, I can look over at that box, look at all those slash pockets, see all of those ideas, and number one, know that my ideas are recorded and ready for me when I am ready for those. And when I do have time and I'm planning our family or my business or our homeschooling, I can pull all those slash pockets out, remind myself of all my fabulous ideas that I had, and decide what I want to take action on next. So I personally do not feel that storing things out of sight helps pretty much anybody. Like, I think the more that we can see what we have, the better. So you're like, great, well, now you just told me not to put anything out of sight. Not true. Like, if you organize your hot mess room and our all access program and you organize your storage room, obviously all of that stuff is out of sight. But the way we have you do it is that everything goes into bins and you put a little label on every bin and then you record what is in each bin in your home operations binder. So if you ever wanted to know what's in your storage room, you would just pull your home operations binder that's either in your kitchen or your home office. You would open it up and you literally have a list of everything that's in your storage room versus going in the storage room, hunting and pecking and seeing if you still have that thing or if you got rid of it. So you can store things out of sight, but we need a record of it. So the storage room is stored in the home operations binder. Anything related to my household projects is stored in my Sunday basket. Anything related to homeschooling is stored in my homeschooling basket. So if I am going to work on a project, there is at least a note in my Sunday basket talking about that project so I don't forget about it or don't forget where I've stored the supplies. So you can store things out of sight, but then put a note either in one of your binders or your workbox or your Sunday basket reminding where you put that thing. Next, I have a 14-year-old girl who is constantly rearranging her room. She never sticks with the system, so her room is always disorganized. This is Abby. She does the same thing. They're just really creative girls, and they're in their bedrooms, and they're bored, so they start organizing. So Abby is constantly reorganizing her room as well, as did I when I was younger. I think it's a fun thing that we do growing up. What I found, what Abby has found, what your daughter will probably find to be successful is you can keep rearranging the room, but you have to have less stuff. Like, you always need to be decluttering every week. So when Abby does a big purge and declutters and reorganizes her room, it stays organized. If she's gone a couple months and she keeps reorganizing her room, but she doesn't do a big purge and get rid of stuff, then it doesn't stay organized because she has a job and she has a car. And so she goes and she buys stuff all the time. And if you keep taking stuff into your bedroom and you don't bring anything out, it doesn't matter how organized you are, it's not going to stay organized. So the secret to that one is to purge every time you reorganize. All right, how do you maintain everything in one place? The same thing in the same place? That is so boring. That is such a classic ADHD thing to say. You guys, you don't want to have 18 different places that you store nail clippers. Scissors should always be in the same drawer in the kitchen so that when you need them, you know where they are. But I hear you. I understand what you're saying, because part of what makes ADHD awesome is that creative spark, is the variety, is the spice of life. And so anything that is repetitive or administrative is like walking through quicksand. Like, I'd rather not even have scissors than have to put scissors back in the same place. I 100% hear you. Here's the thing. We need to have one place for things unless you live by yourself. And even if you live by yourself, you still need to have one place for things because you need to know where to find scissors when you need it. It's no fun to not be able to find the scissors and spend 30 minutes looking for scissors because you didn't want to put them back in the same place. Wouldn't you rather have that 30 minutes to do something else? And also, in addition to that, the other thing that I would say to that is your organization is not your creative outlet. Your creative outlet is your creative outlet. So what is it that you want to be spending your time doing? Is it photography? Is it painting? Is it making movies? Is it making music? Is it writing a book? Is it exercising? What is it that lights you up that you love to spend your time doing? And then every time you have to put the scissors away and put everything away, I want you to say to yourself, oh, I'm going to spend 10 minutes doing this, and then I'm going to go make a piece of music. I'm going to go to the store and buy ingredients for this awesome dinner I'm making tomorrow night. I want you to be thinking in your head while you're walking around picking up your house, oh, I want to do this as fast as possible because I am going to go what? Versus, okay, now is my organizing time, so I'm going to reorganize where we keep scissors. Like, unless you're going to be a professional organizer, it's not a good use of your time. And even when I was a professional organizer, I got way more joy out of doing that at somebody else's house than doing it at mine. So keep them in the same place. Try to get your pickup time. Try to beat your time from the day before. If it took you 15 minutes to clean up the house, set the timer. See if you can get it done in 14. And then go do whatever your creative outlet is. Next question. Task initiation. How do you start when you don't want to do something or the project looks overwhelming? Okay, how do you get started when you don't want to do it and the project looks overwhelming? So if you don't want to do it, the Wednesday podcast coming up next is Diane's interview. Oh my gosh, halfway through the interview with her, I was like, oh, wait a minute. You are using the 100-day program like your vegetables that you have to eat before you get to do dessert, which is doing a project. And she's like, yes. And I was like, I don't know how I like being equated to vegetables, but okay. She literally was getting up, getting her kids off, getting everything ready, doing her 100-day task in 15 minutes, and then she got to whatever. And the whatever was like put a beadboard in her bathroom and create this whole new thing in the entryway and like do all these great craft things. But she did the 100-day program assignment first. So how do you start when you don't want to do something? Do it before you get to do something you want to do. So don't like go through your whole entire day and then at the end of the day say, oh, I got to organize the socks. Say, okay, today I'm going to go get my hair done and have lunch with my friends. So I'm going to get the socks done right away. And then I'm going to go get a coffee on my way to whatever. Like, so do it first before you do something else fun. And then also as far as how do you do it if the project looks overwhelming, break the project down. The reason why the 100-day program works so well for people who have ADHD is because it's only a 15-minute a day assignment, and I give you a super, super small assignment. I don't say go in your closet. I say I want you to look at the shoes in your closet. I tell you exactly what to do the shoes, and then I say go do the shoes. Like, I don't tell you anything about socks or underwear or pants or anything. I keep you very focused on this one thing. I was a middle school math teacher. I'm on it. You are no match for me. So you need an instructor. You need someone to say, do this. Part of the problem, if you struggle with ADHD and getting your home organized, well, we're going to get to it, is figuring out where to start and what to do next. And that's why the 100-day program really tells you, do this, do this, do this. You turn around and you've been through the whole house. I am consistently inconsistent. That's the comment. I'm consistently inconsistent. All this goes back to like a Gretchen Rubin rebel type answer in her tendencies. What tendency you have, you might test as a rebel or an ADHD. You like variety. Like, there is never going to be a great executive assistant with ADHD because it's just too repetitive. It's too administrative. It's not your gifting. You want to go out and create and be around people and change things and break things and invent things. You don't want to do things over and over and over again that are the same. So you say, I am consistently inconsistent, right? Because you don't like routines. You don't like repetition. So what I would say in that case is do one thing until it's completed and also pick one thing to work on each week or each month or each quarter, and then move on to the next and the next and the next. So pick one thing and work on it for a period of time, and then pick another thing, pick another thing, pick another thing. How would you organize an ADHD student, their backpack, their desk, their home desk, their school desk, their locker, all of that? Okay, I do address this inside of the KID program. I talk about having a Lisa binder. Now, I know this works for Joey, and I know this worked for a lot of the kids when I was a middle school math teacher. Part of what is overwhelming for kids in school is that there are so many transitions, especially if they have ADHD, the transitions are going to really hamper them. There's the transition between classrooms. There's the transition of going to your locker and what you need to bring out of your locker. There's the transition of having different notebooks, different books, different supplies. There's a transition from home to school, from school back to home again. And in every single one of these transitions, things get lost and confused. So what I did with Joey all the way back to fifth grade is the teachers wanted him to have different folders, different colors, different binders. And I said, no. I said, it's too many different things. He ends up late to class. He ends up with the wrong folder. He loses so much instructional time just trying to manage all of these supplies. So I created a Lisa binder years and years and years ago. It's basically a 2-inch binder. We use the lattice binder inside of the kids program. And in there, we put in slash pockets. And the color of your class is wherever it lands in the schedule. So you put your slash pockets inside of your binder. Slash pocket number one is class number one. Slash pocket number two is class number two. I don't care what color they are, all the way down. So that you know by the time you get to your last slash pocket, you've been to your last class. I didn't have my kids use notebooks. Everybody wants a notebook. No one ever collects a notebook. They have you use it like 3 pages in the notebook. It's pointless. We got filler paper, and I put a little bit of filler paper behind every single slash pocket. So if you can imagine a binder with plastic slash pockets in there and a little bit of 3-hole punched lined paper behind every single slash pocket. So if it was whatever class, you would start taking your notes behind that slash pocket. What I love about slash pockets are they're pockets. So they are folders. You could put any notes in there that you get or handouts or worksheets right into the binder. And then every couple of weeks, I would go through with Joey and we would go through all of his notes and I would 3-hole punch them and I would put them in the binder. And when he was in high school, after exams, we would take everything out and we would clear it out for the next semester. But until the end of the semester, every single piece of paper that teacher gave them was 3-hole punched and in there and in order. One folder with slash pockets in it, no notebooks, no extra binders, nothing. And Joey literally went to high school for 4 years and never used his locker one time. Not joking. We put stuff in there every year, and every year we would take it out and he would go his entire day never going to his locker. Now, he didn't wear a coat because I drove him to school, so he didn't have a coat to put in there. And he bought lunch every single day, so he did not have a lunch to put in there either. But he literally carried his notebook and his English book and something else around all day long and then got back into the car again. No chance to lose anything. And their school was on an iPad, so he had an iPad. One notebook, everything in there. Now, on occasion, the math teacher would want a separate notebook for math notes, and we would do that. So then there would be a separate one. But for the most part, almost every single class where a teacher is going to say, you have to have a separate notebook, if you go to them with this system and you say, hey, this is how I set it up and this is going to work best for my executive functions, the teacher is going to say, great, what an awesome solution. You know what? So-and-so is struggling. Maybe that would work for them too. Joey is so cute. By the time he got to high school, he so loved this binder system I had created that he walked into his class and class where all the kids with IEPs went in the morning, and everybody looked at his binder, said we're all set up, and he said, my mom's a professional organizer. She can help you get your papers organized too if you'd like. This is so cute. He was so excited. This was 2014. So empower them to organize their binder and take ownership of their papers. They don't care. Trust me, they do not care carrying the whole entire big notebook around the school all day, because every single class they get to now, they're on time and they can't possibly not have it with them because it's all in one binder. So it's very empowering for the kids. Next question. How do you stay on task? Where do you start? Everyone needs help. The kids' spaces are always a mess. It's a loaded question, right? So how do you stay on task? Where do you start? Again, I'm going to go back to, you need to have a program. If you're going to organize your house, everything is a mess. Like when you start getting organized, even now, I just think about my house even now. Like there's some places in the basement I need to go through. The laundry room isn't quite done. Like there's always more to do and there's always stuff that's getting disorganized. So where do you start? I'm going to say right now, if you're not in the 100-day program, I want you to start in the laundry room. Go to organize365.com/try100, download for free the laundry room, watch the videos, keep going back to the laundry room until you have it all the way done. Number one, no one's going to mess it up. No one wants to go in there. So it's great. You can take as long as you want. And you can really puzzle through how would this work better for you. So start with the laundry room. Start with one thing, stay on task. If that works for you, which I hope it does, then I would invest in the 100-day program. You don't need to be figuring out what you're supposed to be doing next. You need to take all of your energy and focus on just giving me 15 minutes a day. I'll tell you what to do. Just give me the 15 minutes a day. And then she says, kids' spaces are always a mess. And I'm just going to say, yes. Yes, of course. Kids are less organized than adults are going to be. They're less structured, right? And so kids' spaces are always going to be a mess. I will always, and I continue to tell you to focus on your organization first. If you focus on getting someone else organized first, they're going to get disorganized again because you can't control people, number one. And number two, there's a reason why kids clean their bedroom every single Saturday. Adults do not start their Saturdays by cleaning their bedrooms. Their bedrooms generally, once they're organized, stay organized, right? But kids always start Saturdays cleaning their bedrooms, every single one. You know why? Because it's a mini apartment. It's like us cleaning our houses, like physically cleaning our houses. They need to organizationally clean their bedroom because their bedroom is their entire house. So kids' bedrooms are going to need to be reorganized every single week. Just like your house is going to need to be cleaned every single week, but your house is not going to need to be organized every single week because organizing and cleaning are different. Kids need to organize, adults need to clean because their house is already organized. So keep going back to all the spaces in your house that you have not organized yet. Once it's organized, it's easier to clean and maintain. And once you have everything organized, magically, many of your children will have followed suit and already are organizing on their own. And the ones that aren't, you can then focus on and help because you have grown your organizing muscles to where you can reach back and teach someone else. Next question. I'm getting overwhelmed in a very messy space. How do you move forward when your brain shuts down? Okay, so this is very, and again, I'm repeating these questions because you're repeating them to me. This is very similar to all the way back in the beginning where someone said, how do I get so overwhelmed that I do nothing? So same thing. I'm going to have you give a whole big brain dump list. Get everything out of your head. When you get overwhelmed and your brain shuts down, I want you to take your brain and I want you to put it on paper. I want you to keep doing that over and over and over again until you get used to and your brain gets used to the fact that it's not allowed to talk back to you. It's not allowed to talk down to you. It's not allowed to overwhelm you and overpower you because you are going to take it and you are going to put it on paper. And as you keep learning to put your brain on paper, your brain will quiet down. It won't talk to you as much. It will not talk to you as negatively. And when it talks to you, it knows you're going to write that on a piece of paper or an index card and put it in the Sunday basket. And once a week, you're going to objectively look at all of those things that the brain says you're supposed to do. And not in the heat of the moment, but on Sunday, you're going to look at it and you're going to say, well, I don't need to do that, or that already got done, or I can delegate that, or it'd be great if we could do that, but we can't afford that, so I'm taking it off the list. And you are going to eliminate a whole lot of things objectively from paper that is hard to do just inside of your brain. And the last question that I have today is, how do I learn to delegate? I have 5 kids, 6 to 20, plus a hubby. Oh, yeah. I have talked before about how I accidentally turned my husband into a child by managing our household, by taking over everything, and now I've had to undo it, so I totally understand that one as well. How do you learn to delegate? I'm just going to assume that you are probably a stay-at-home mom, and so the house is your domain. Number one, if you're a stay-at-home mom and the house is your domain, it is your work. So take pride in it that you have done all of the things. You're doing an excellent job. But now, as your children are aging and your youngest one is school age, it's time for you to get some of that time back for yourself, and you're ready to delegate. I would suggest the easiest and best way to delegate is, number one, if possible, to delegate to paid help. Do you have a house cleaner? Can you afford a house cleaner? What would you have to do in order to afford a house cleaner? I would do that. You are going to get back so much time. It is crazy. What takes me 8 hours to clean my house every week, my house cleaner can do in 3 hours every other week. I don't know how the math works. I'm just telling you that's what happens. So the number one thing to delegate, if possible, is house cleaning. I can't even explain how it saves so much time, but it does. Second, in delegating, find a task that someone else can do and you're okay with how they would do it, and then delegate it completely. So let's say you have 5 kids plus your husband. You probably run your dishwasher every single day, and you don't want to empty the dishwasher anymore. That's going to be a task that you are going to delegate. So you're going to delegate it to the kids. You have 5 kids. Each kid is going to have a day of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You're going to ask your husband if he wouldn't mind emptying the dishwasher on Saturday and Sunday. You do no longer empty the dishwasher. Everyone's going to say, yep, mom, no problem. We got that done. Here's the rub. They will not empty the dishwasher the way you empty the dishwasher. They will not put things away where they are supposed to be put away, and you need to be okay with that. You can't delegate and expect perfection and expect it's done the way you would do it. If you want perfection and the way you would do it, then you just have to do it yourself. So the biggest rule in delegating is, if you want to delegate it, it gets done, not necessarily to your specifications. Maybe you're better with your kids than I am and you can actually get those things, but for the most part, usually you're setting yourself up for failure if you delegate perfectionistic expectations. So if you just don't want to do the dishwasher at the end of the day and it's always ready at 8 p.m. and somebody else can do it, or they're going to do it first thing in the morning before they go to school, delegate it, know that it's going to get done. Second, they're not necessarily going to get it done on your timetable, even though they should. They're probably not. And so part of delegating is, it is a hassle. It really is a hassle because you know your energy level and what you can get done. So when you decide to delegate it to the person. They're going to do it at their speed and they're going to get it done. Expect that it will get done, but don't take it back. You don't want to take it back. So once you delegate the dishwasher to the family, If you can't eat dinner that night because nobody emptied the dishes, or you've run out of stuff and you can't cook, well then say, wow, that's such a bummer. We can't cook. And the penalty is whoever was supposed to empty the dishwasher is now going to pay for pizza for the family. Or make a logical consequence. They'll be like, holy cow, if I don't empty the dishwasher, I just lost $30 for pizza because it's a family of eight. Seven. You know, big family. So that is how I would help you learn to delegate. All right, I would love some feedback. Do you guys like this when I take a whole bunch of questions that you have related to one topic? Last time was on your schedules and creating habits. This time was on how ADHD affects home organization. I'd love to do more of these in the future. Go ahead and email me, lisa@organize365.com. If you have another series that you think would be great for me to add to my Instagram story or on Facebook and solicit questions that you have that I can answer in the future.